The body keeps the score, but it also holds the key to healing. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child.
Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shitshows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shitshow. And if you're wondering, what the hell is an adult child? Allow me to tell you. So an adult child is somebody who grew up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional family, who responds to adult situations with self-doubt, self-blame, or a sense of being wrong or inferior, all as a result of their childhood experiences. Now, what does this look like? What are the symptoms of being an adult child? Approval seeking, people pleasing, loss of identity, fear of people and of authority figures, romantic attraction to either those who have addictions or compulsions or are emotionally unavailable, fear of abandonment, an overdeveloped sense of responsibility, and an addiction to excitement. Now, I want to touch upon this addiction to excitement piece, y'all. So really what this is an addiction to negative excitement. So basically, we have an addiction to doing things that make us feel like shit, that produce chemicals within the body that don't feel so good. Now, why is this the case? When you grow up in a home that is chaotic, unpredictable, where you had to walk on eggshells, where you were constantly on guard, fear becomes our base operating system. Feeling fear feels safer than feeling safe. Because in order for us to have a semblance of safety within our home, we had to be in this constant state of hypervigilance. And so as a result of this, we subconsciously seek out similar negative excitement because it's familiar. Even though it's unhealthy, even though it feels like shit, it is our norm. Feeling uncomfortable is what feels comfortable for us. Now, one of my main forms of negative excitement is through procrastination. And one of the ways that really shows up is procrastinating in recording this short little segment that I do at the beginning of each episode, which really should be just easy breezy, you know, sit down, bang it out. But for some reason, I wait until the last minute. And then there's this negative excitement associated with the fact that I waited till the last minute. And then I have this preconceived notion that it's going to be hard, that I'm going to struggle, and that somehow this just like these few minutes that I need to record here, this is going to be like taking the bar exam or like taking the CPA exam. And then I drive myself crazy. And then I get into an ADHD hellhole and I just re-record it over and over and over and over again. And then I'm like, why do you keep doing this to yourself every single week? Now, I experienced this past Tuesday and I said, we're not doing this shit anymore. It feels horrible and it's completely avoidable. And so it is Thursday, 6 days. Yes, 6 whole days before releasing this episode that I am recording this, okay? This is huge. Can we keep this going, folks? I really, really hope I can. So just give myself a little pat, pat, pat on the back. So if you're new here, welcome aboard. We curse here. I'm an acquired taste. Buckle up. So today we are diving deep with Naomi Murad. Naomi is a body psychotherapist. Her three main healing modalities that she combines in her work are brain spotting, parts work, and inner child work. She has a heavy focus on the somatic piece, that the body keeps the score. And she was recommended to me from friend of the pod, fellow podcaster, boundaries coach Barb Nangle. And wow, this is a really powerful conversation. I do just want to give a trigger warning in advance that this conversation does include discussion of childhood sexual abuse. So let's just get the damn show on the road. But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the Join Shit Show. This is my online support community where I host 4 weekly Zoom support groups. This is where you can connect with other fellow shit shows who are doing the damn work to heal. This is a support community at your fingertips. We have an app. Within the app too, we have all these various sub-communities where you can connect with people too. Like we have a shit show parenting group. We have a childhood sexual abuse group. We have a shit show dudes group. We have internal family systems group. We have a neurodivergent group. We have a divorce and separation group. So in addition to connecting with people that are, you know, trying to heal from their childhood, you can also connect with people who may be dealing with the specific issues that you are currently facing today. I would like to give a shout out to the newest members of the Shit Show community. So thank you, thank you, thank you to Casey, Jen, another Jen, Audrey, Joey, Kareen, Trisha, Steven, Marlena, Melissa, Teresa, Dawn, Adam, Elizabeth, Rachel, Andra, Ray, Keely, Ruthie, Mabel, Alyssa, Megan, Andrew, Shelby, Sarah, and Tina. Thank you, thank you, thank you, you fine-ass shit shows. How about the rest of y'all follow suit? Come on, you know you want to do it. Less than $1 a day. You can quit after a month. See the link in the show notes. Do the damn thing. Next, give me a little follow on Insta, on TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please give me a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. It truly makes a difference. Thank you. Love you all. So, my pleasure to introduce body psychotherapist Naomi Marad, friend of the pod, Barb Nangle. Welcome.
You.
So, what did you think when you listened to the podcast? You were like, what the hell am I getting myself into here? This girl's nuts.
I thought, actually, this girl's interesting.
Christine's neutral.
Yeah, no, if I thought I was getting myself into something where I shouldn't be, I wouldn't be here today.
Okay, so this is where I like to start, as you probably heard. When was the moment that you realized that your childhood screwed you up a whole hell of a lot more than you originally thought it did?
I was completely dissociated from my childhood until I was 28. Mm-hmm. What I did know was that I suffered from severe depression. And I was carrying like this deep pain inside of me. It was like every time I looked into my body, everything was black and didn't understand why I was so depressed. I wasn't missing anything in life. I was already married at the age of 21. I'm still married to the same man. I already had 2 children by the time I was 28. Like everything was good in my life. There was no reason to be depressed. And I was still depressed, still down. And I didn't understand why I didn't have any memories from my childhood. And that really, really bothered me. Like up to the age of 9, I remembered almost nothing. And even after that, it was just all scattered. So I always knew that something had gone awfully wrong, but I couldn't say what it was.
Yeah.
After I gave birth to my second daughter, I was 27. I fell into a depression that this time lasted for 8 months straight. Usually I was like in manic depression. I was either up. Here it was just straight 8 months where I couldn't get myself out of the depression. And I started going to not traditional therapy. I went to a body psychotherapist where basically I learned through, at that time, it was like a kind of body work where through the body you learn about your trauma and basically how it affects you and how it shows up in your daily life, but through body work. That was the first thing that I did.
How did you know to go do that?
I had a friend at the time and she said, you know, this guy, he's a friend of my husband's. And I went for a few sessions to him and it really helped me. Why don't you try it out? And I was like, it spoke to me. And traditional psychotherapy never really appealed much to me. I didn't believe much in that, because I think I always knew that the trauma is both in the body and in the brain. Like there's a saying, the issue is in the tissue.
How were you aware? Had you studied? Like you weren't a therapist at the time yet, were you?
I actually thought that I was going to go into advertising or tell the news on TV when I was a teenager. Those were like my dreams. And at some point I understood that this is really not my path. I don't know. It was just
like a felt sense. Yeah.
And it was something that I felt drawn to. And I knew at that point already that I wanted to help people. I wanted to become a therapist. I just didn't know which approach to take. So anyway, through that therapy, I worked through my depression. I learned, my whole awareness started to grow about what makes me depressed. And I noticed that every time I get angry, I fall into a depression. Most of the time, actually, I didn't even notice that I would get angry. A big part of the problem, and could have been something like as simple as someone cutting the line in front of the post office. And I would come home and I would find myself depressed, and I would like had to learn how to backtrack and like what was my trigger. And once I learned that, and I learned the minute triggers and what sets me off, it was amazing. Like depression completely dissolved.
Do you remember first making that connection? Like what was the specific incident that allowed you to see that it was anger that took you into the depression?
It was just learning how to backtrack. Like at first, when I started to learn about my depression, it took me like days to understand what had set off the depression. It was even just having the awareness that something happens in your life, that certain pattern, it brings up a certain reaction. So much happens unconsciously. Like we walk through the world blindly, not being aware, you know, what pushes our buttons. So it was learning that and understanding that there are things that can push your button and that set off a certain reaction, emotion, behavior. So that was my first step to waking up and learning about myself. And after I went through that process, my childhood memory started to wake up.
Okay, Paul, I have one question I want to throw in there. Do you remember or did you figure out what was the trigger for what sent you into that depression after you had your second child?
After I had my first daughter, while I was pregnant with my first child, I was terrified of becoming a mother. Terrified. And I was afraid that I was going to fail her, that I was just not going to be a good mother. And then after she was born, I was constantly scared that she would be physically abused, that she would be sexually abused. And I had no childhood memory at that point in time, nothing. I just walked around with that constant fear that she would be sexually abused. And I even told my husband when she was 8 months old, I said, listen, I don't want you to take a shower with her. And he accepted it. You know, he didn't argue with me or anything, but you know, it was a strange reaction for him. And then, you know, with the second birth, I think that just escalated. It just like exploded within me. And I had no words for it yet. I was still so dissociated that, you know, it just pushed me to the edge.
Well, we're going to circle back to that because that's so fascinating, so interesting how that's a thing. Okay, so you're working through your anger triggers. And so then the childhood memories start to come up. How were you connecting like in that way? What did it look like sitting in that in your appointments? Would you be asked to like check in to where you're feeling things in the body, or what did the process look like?
That first process that I did, which was also later on, like the first thing that I decided to study, was really body work oriented. That means it was really like imagine massage, but it was certain techniques used on the body that awaken certain feelings and emotions. It's like really becoming a trained body worker and really learning how to read the body and how the emotion that's showing up.
I need someone like you, Naomi. I need to find somebody local that's doing this. Yes.
It's very powerful. And that's how the memory started to come up. And for a long time before the first memory came up, I kept having the same vision of like seeing myself locked up in a cage, like around, I would see like a prison cell, and I would be inside of that cell. And the first time that door just cracked open was when those memories started to surface. And so remembering that I was sexually abused by my father. And at first I had very few memories. I just only remembered sexual abuse by my father, being raped by my father. And I was so overwhelmed by that realization, that understanding, which really resonated within my whole being. It was like my life finally started to make sense. Like until that moment, I was trying to figure out my life, trying to understand. I always felt like I had this huge puzzle with all the pieces scattered all over the floor. And that was the first time like some of the pieces started connecting. And you asked me about the moment where my life-changing moment, that's what led me to that life-changing moment, because I was so devastated when I started remembering my past that I found myself driving in the car. I was on my way home, and I was seriously contemplating whether to crash into the tree or not. I wanted to live or to die. And I think that's why I remembered, honestly, because I had a pretty stable home. I had a husband who loved me unconditionally. I had two little children. They were, how old were they? 1 and 3, something like that. And I knew that my girls needed me. And that's what made me decide to drive home instead of crashing. Mm-hmm. But I also made a decision that moment. I said, okay, I choose to live. I choose to live fully and wholeheartedly. And in that moment, I had this, may sound strange, this realization that it's possible to heal 100%. And it was that 100% that made me like go full gas, full on into healing my life, into finding myself. And I remember every therapist I went to at that time, I said, I'm going to heal 100%. And they all looked at me and they were like, I don't know, you can heal, but 100%.
Like 99.95, yeah.
We can get close. There is no such thing. And I said, no, I can't. So that's how my journey really began.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, I didn't endure sexual abuse, but it's so interesting how it just seems like that is such a common thing where a mom and a wife feels that rage and that mistrust towards her husband and the taking care of the child, how that is such a common red flag or way that that manifests.
It's maybe a way in that it manifests. I can't say that I had rage towards my husband. It was just a fear, you know?
Yeah. And irrational, right? Super irrational. Before you made the connection, was there a part of you that understood that it was like maybe not normal, or I don't even want to use the word normal, but there was something like
embarrassed maybe about it. Out of that. And I was like, it took me a lot of courage to walk up to my husband and say, you know, hey, love, I would appreciate if you stop taking it. Because I thought his feelings would be hurt and he wouldn't understand. But it was so strong, that fear inside of me. I had no idea why I felt that way. I always say, if somebody would have told me that this is what happened to me.
Yeah, you were told you were nuts.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. And it's like the dissociation is there for a reason. It's there to protect, 100%. Here to keep us safe. And I've seen it in my own life. I've seen it with my clients over and over again. It's like we're only ready when we're ready for each given the next step, whenever that is, you know. And sometimes we can work on a certain issue for a long time and we can only move forward when we're ready.
Yeah, I know. And the beauty of it is like the subconscious or our higher self knows like when it's time, and it's not going to come up until we're in a position that we can really handle it and face it. And so it's like this whack-a-mole where you're like, really more? But it's like, we fail to realize that we have to continuously build that resilience and capacity to be able to take on the next thing. So.
Absolutely. And we have to have certain parts within us that need to heal in order to be able to deal with the next thing.
I know that you said that you didn't have many memories of your childhood, but what, I mean, paint the picture for me. Like, did you have siblings? And prior to that, prior to those memories coming up, how would you have described your childhood?
I was the youngest of four. My siblings were 6, 10, and 12 years older than me.
Oh, wow.
My siblings all left by the time I was... One of my brothers moved to England. I grew up in Germany. He moved to England when I was 8, and he finished high school there. My other siblings, my sister married when I was 9, and my brother, who was like a year younger than her, moved with her away to another town in Germany. So I stayed alone with my parents from the age of 9. And that's how I always explained why from the age of 9, I had more memories. But up to the age of 9, I remembered close to nothing. Describing my life with my family, I thought my family was really fucked up, for lack of better words.
Those are the perfect words.
I never felt loved by my parents. I never felt like they knew me, like they saw me. My mom was very narcissistic, very mean. There was no love in our house. There was a lot of hurting others, putting everyone down, a lot of resentment. Yeah, there was no warmth, no love. It was a cruel place to survive. I remember from being little, I like young teenager, 12, 13, I would tell my friends, I only love my parents because they're my parents. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty harsh thing to say.
Did your mom stay at home? And did your dad work a lot? Was he home a lot?
He worked a lot. Yeah, he worked a lot. He was home in the evenings, but he was very, you know, until my memory started to come up, I had a lot more issues with my mom.
Seems to be very common.
Yeah. Like the issues like expressed themselves through my mom. My mom was punishing me for what was happening with my dad. But because I was so dissociated from what was happening with my dad, that I couldn't make the connections. And every month I would be punished for about a week to 10 days until I would get sick. And then she would feel sorry for me. She would take care of me. And then the punishment started all over again. And I never, I was constantly being so harshly punished. So I had a lot of resentment towards my mom. Also resentment towards my dad, but without having words for it. Makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing that seems to be common too, with from what I've seen with women who had been sexually abused by their dads, that it seems like there's usually a really harsh, narcissistic type mother.
You gotta be in order to look the other way. You gotta be really selfish. You gotta have that mechanism within you to be able to look the other way. Because, and I know that she couldn't deal with what was going on in our house.
Absolutely.
It was far beyond just sexual abuse. It was, my father involved me in sex trafficking. I was for sex trafficking on a regular basis. Also, very early on, pornographic movies, you name it, I was there. All sorts of ritual abuse. There was a lot of horrific things going on behind the scenes. And without trying to protect my mom, I think she was scared. And
of course.
It was like survival of the fittest, you know? And everybody had to do what they had to do in order to survive. So everyone lived this. Like, that's one thing I was always very aware of with my family. Was like, to the outside, they tried to paint this perfect life where like we're this perfect family, very wealthy growing up, where everything was like picture perfect. We had to be dressed perfect, we had to behave perfect, when like everything was supposed to look perfect to the outside world, but inside everything was so freaking rotten.
There was such a large age gap between you and your siblings, but what role, like, what were the different dynamics like within the home? Were there the typical, you know, like hero child, scapegoat, lost child within your siblings? Or was it kind of hard to see because of the age gaps?
Well, there was definitely the black sheep of the family, one of my brothers, beyond doubt. But other than that, you know, like you said, the age gap was very big. grew up pretty much alone because I was younger, and also because they all left after I was 8 and 9 years old. I basically grew up as an only child relatively early on. I spent all this time alone with my parents.
And then did you leave the house when you were 18?
I left the house when I was 20, and I moved to to Italy to study. And while I was there, I went to visit in Germany. I met my husband, moved with him to New York. From there, I moved to Israel. From there, I moved to Atlanta. I've moved a lot in my life.
Sounds like it. So what did your, as these memories were surfacing and you were starting to work through this stuff, did you have a relationship with your parents at the time? Were they still living?
My mom's still alive. My dad only passed away, only, I think, in 2019.
Okay.
After I started remembering. Until then, I did have a relationship with my parents. I did see them. I had a relationship with my siblings. I was never close to my siblings. One of the reasons I always wanted 4 kids, because I wanted my kids to be close, connected, to trust each other, to love each other. And I knew something was like really wrong in the relationship amongst us as siblings. Lots of secrets always in my family, lots of secrets that we had to hold from one another, a lot of things that we were not allowed to speak to one another. And after I started having my first memories, I cut off contact with my dad at first. And after 3 months, my sister called me up and she said, "Why aren't you talking to dad?" And I said, "I don't want to talk about it." And
she said, you just stop returning his call, or did you tell him that you weren't communicating with him anymore?
Stop answering his call. And she kept asking me on the phone, "Why aren't you talking to dad?" And I said, "I don't want to talk about it." And I got really upset. And I said, "I don't want to talk about it." And then she said, "Don't tell me that he raped you." And I burst out in tears. I don't think I've ever cried like that. And for 24 hours, she knew exactly what I was talking about. And after that, her wall, basically, we hardly spoke after that. And 2 months later, decided to fly out to Germany, invite all my siblings, and decided that I was going to confront everyone. Now, I was very naive at that point in time. I was like really still in the early beginnings of my healing stages. And I had not much understanding of what was happening with me and the whole family dynamic. I just thought, I'll fly to Germany. I'm going to invite all of my siblings and I'm going to
help. Kumbaya.
Everyone's going to say, everyone's going to get together. My father is going to apologize. And we're going to be one happy family. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I remembered very little at that time. It's important to say that. I didn't remember any of the ritual abuse. I didn't remember trafficking. I didn't remember mass rapes. I didn't remember all of that. Not that rape by your father is not bad enough, but I was able to compartmentalize it. So I went to Germany. I invited all of my family. And I wrote a letter to all of my siblings. I wrote a letter to my mom. I wrote several letters to my dad as I was starting to remember things, describing what I remember in each letter. I arrived, I took my dad to a separate room, and I gave the whole package of letters to the rest of the family. I said, "Read while I'm with dad." And I sat down. It's like suicide in a way. When like, you know, what were you thinking exactly? And I sat down with him and I started reading out loud the letters that I'd written to him describing how he had raped me and where and how old I was at each one. Yeah. And my father was quiet. And just at some point, like towards the third letter or so, he said, "What? Me? I raped you? Your poor husband, what he must be going through with you." And I just said, "You want to hear what I have to say or not?" He said, "Continue reading." I finished reading the letters. I don't know how, but I did. We went into the kitchen. And the only thing my siblings had to say was that it's clear by the letters that they were not written by a crazy person. But they don't know what to do with it. My dad reassured everyone that he's very sorry, but he has no idea what I'm talking about. So I don't know in what context I told you the story, but.
Well, I was asking, like, were you in communication with him? So then was that it?
After that, I stopped communication with my dad. I cut off contact with my mom on and off. My mom, there were periods of times where I didn't speak to her for 6 months, 2 years, 3 years. Like, it was like on and off. My mom kept saying, I don't know what you're talking about. If you want to prove it, I want you to prove it to me. I have no pictures in my head. You know, take him to court. Like, she had her own agenda going. It had nothing to do with me. The communication with her was so hurtful, so destructive, taking responsibility, that the only reason eventually I got back in touch with my mom was because one of my children, she wanted to see my mom at some point. I said, and that was after I hadn't spoken to my mom, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years, I don't even remember. And I said, there's no way I will allow for her to be in communication with my mom without me being there to protect her. So I'm not going to throw her into the lion's cage without me there. And that's why I got back in touch with my mom. And I think today I finally reached the place in life where I have more compassion for my mom. It took me a long time. A lot of resentment. A lot of hurt, because I never once heard, I'm sorry. I can't even imagine what you've been through.
It's like it vacillates. I think it's probably irrational to think that the anger won't be triggered or come up, you know, at some point. But it is the realization of, like, she's not even capable of going there. It's not even a consider. It's not even a possibility. Even if she wanted to, I think.
I couldn't have put it more accurate. I always said if my mom was actually going to go there, she would not be able to survive this, not be able to cope with the guilt and shame that she would be like. For her, that's the best thing, to just departmental and compartmentalize it and stuff it away somewhere in her subconscious, because it's the only way to survive.
It is. And it's so sophisticated in the way in which it's locked away, you know, and it's very similar to, like, alcoholism or addiction. You know what I mean? It's just, there's a part of it that's like, you really are just a hostage to it in a way, you know?
Beautifully said. Absolutely. You're a real hostage to it. And yeah.
You know, one thing I thought was interesting, I was reading in a book and it was talking about repetition compulsion and trying to rewrite history. And I'd never heard it from this perspective, that part of holding on to anger can also be an element of holding out hope that you can repair the relationship too, which I thought was kind of interesting.
So true. So true. It's like totally holding on to the hope that something can be repaired. Like, I'm still waiting for something. I still need something from the other party.
Yeah.
I stop needing. That means that, like, the more I heal myself, pain and my own inner child, the less I need to make up for my pain, to fix it. The less I need my mom to say, I'm so sorry. It actually, the table begins to turn. And I think this is where I started. At some point, it started shifting to having true compassion for her. Understanding that, like you said, she doesn't know how to give what I need. She never knew how to give it. And she didn't get, couldn't give it, because she probably also never got it.
100%.
Not very much there for her. She always says, I never had parents who were there for me. I had to go through everything alone. She had a very hard life growing up, that much I know. And she's just the product of her own past.
Yeah, I think that, and then a lot of people can perceive that as having that sort of stance on this is somehow you saying that, like, what she did is okay, and are giving her a pass, and it's not. I think perhaps another element of it is, like, when we really personalize it so much, or we think it's because they're almost acting as if they have a choice in the matter, or somehow it's some sort of a conscious thing. I wonder how much of that is attached to the, that almost ties it to the belief that, like, there's something inherently wrong with us in a way. Do you know what I mean?
And again,
I just wonder that sometimes when it seems like when we view it as this other person, like has a choice, we're acting as if they would be able to acknowledge it and apologize. And it almost, in a way, I feel like, is it somehow reinforcing a belief that they're not doing that because we're not worth it in a way? You know what I mean? As opposed to like, we're really personalizing it, like that they have a choice and that they could be doing this. They could acknowledge it. They could say they're sorry. By personalizing and it's the same thing with like alcoholism or addiction, right? It's like, if they really loved me, then they'd stop. And it's like, well, no. And so is that just kind of like further ingraining these beliefs that we're unlovable or that there's something inherently wrong with us by holding them in that light? You know what I mean?
Definitely. I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. And I think the only way for us to make sense of the abuse that we go through, of the neglect, the hurt, by taking responsibility and blaming ourselves.
Yep.
You have to say, oh, wow, if I'm treated with such disrespect, with such lack of love, with such, so much pain, okay, there must be something inherently wrong with me. And it's the only way to feel any kind of control.
Mm-hmm.
Thing that scares humans the most is to be in lack of control. So it's like the default autopilot to take responsibility and say, okay, it must be me, lovable. That's why I'm being treated that way. That's because I'm not good enough.
It provides that semblance of control. I'm curious with the anger piece for you, what do you think the underlying wound was that was getting triggered? Was it a, I'm not seen, I'm not heard?
It was, I felt not lovable. I felt extremely unworthy and a lot of unworthiness, deep sense of not being good enough, definitely not being lovable. And then like overcompensating in life, like I'm a giver in my, like, that's my default. I like to give and I like to do, or I like to make people happy is the truth. But I would like overdo, give too much, not set clear boundaries. Boundaries was something that I really had to learn. I think that was one of my hardest lessons. That your boundaries, knowing what my personal boundary is and how to make that clear to the outside world without even having to say something, but it being so clear that my boundaries cannot be crossed.
Be crossed, yeah, absolutely. So I'd love to hear about your journey in healing this trauma and kind of your philosophy as far as when you work with people, just the aspect of this being somatic. And that this being stored within the body and how it's not necessarily about talking about it or looking at it from an intellectual or a cognitive perspective, but that it's really about addressing what's stored in the body. And how would you explain, you know, that process or how the healing works? All right, my shit show ladies, let me tell you about how I can make getting dressed so much easier for you. Armoire is a clothing rental membership where you get to build your perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you gotta do is take a 5-minute style quiz and then select from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new to you styles. So I love this because I'm on video quite often on interviews and social media content, and I don't want people to be like, is that the only shirt that this girl owns? I also would not consider myself in the know of what's hot and what's not. But with Armoire, I get to pretend like I'm a fashionista. So this is perfect for working moms, for stay-at-home moms, for any women who just don't feel like going to the store. Now, right now, you shit show ladies can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off your first month. So that is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/adultchild. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/adultchild to get 50% off your first month and never worry about what to to wear ever again. Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? So Katherine Heigl, you know her from Grey's Anatomy, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says that she's seen more issues with dog joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. So what she's discovered is that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. But fortunately, she has found that by just adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformation in their health. And she has made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. Now, y'all know I'm a cat lady. Y'all know that Kiki is the queen of the shit show here. But I watched this video and there's actually some things that I can apply to her health. So hopefully she'll live another 15 years or so. So go to badlandsfood.com/adultchild and watch Catherine's video. Again, that is badlandsfood.com/adultchild.
I'll start out with something very, very simple, okay? You and I are having a conversation right now. If you were to zoom in for a moment and just notice what is happening to your breath as we're speaking, mm-hmm. What is happening inside your body as we're having this conversation, what is it that you're noticing?
I feel some energy in my legs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel comfortable talking to you. I feel mostly at peace.
So that at peace has a certain resonance within your body, right? Mm-hmm. The same way when someone feels angry, mm-hmm. they feel like their body's tightened, or if someone is sad and depressed, they'll feel low energy. So we have a tendency to separate feeling and emotion from our body symptoms. But basically, everything that is happening happens both in our bodies and in our minds. Mm-hmm. And we cannot
separate.
And that's why all of the techniques that I use, mm-hmm. body-mind connected. And when we only speak about our, say, depression, okay, about our relationship issues, about our addiction, we can only access a very limited understanding of what is actually happening to us. Because in our neocortex, our thinking brain, we have like, it's like a logical thinking, okay? It's what helps us organize and make sense of things, but on a logical level. So we try to make sense of what we're experiencing without paying attention to what is happening. Mm-hmm. And when I work with people, I work with the subcortex, with the emotional brain, where our emotions are stored, our memories are stored, our patterns, our belief systems. And they're both in our subcortex, which is like the back part of our brain and our body. And when I connect the two, then we bypass the thinking mind and we can access the patterns and behaviors that are basically triggering the root cause that we're dealing with today. Mm-hmm. When we access the root cause of the pain, can we really begin to heal?
And do you have a profound experience that you had as far as releasing something in your body, or where's some powerful moments that you've experienced?
What came to me? I experience these every single day. Mm-hmm. I mean, time I do a lot of work on myself. Mm-hmm. And one of the techniques that I use is brain spotting. Today I work with three main modalities, which is brain spotting, parts work, and inner child healing. Mm-hmm. And like are interwoven together. And brain spotting, maybe, I don't know if you've ever heard of
it. Is that like EMDR light?
So this is like it derived from the EMDR. Mm-hmm. David Grand is the one that came up with brain spotting as he was teaching EMDR. So it evolved from that. But brain spotting is a much, let's say, easier and much deeper going technique than EMDR.
Do tell.
Yay. So basically in brain spotting, we say where you look affects the way you feel.
Say that again.
Look.
The way you look.
Yes, where you look affects.
Oh, where you look. Okay, got it.
Affects the way you feel. Meaning that even as we're talking at some points, you know, I'll be looking up as I'm talking to something, or you'll be looking that direction. Mm-hmm. And it's because we're thinking about certain things that we're talking about, and it automatically takes our gaze in certain directions. And it's not because we're trying to avoid eye contact. It's just what we naturally do without even paying attention to it. And that happens because these eye positions, okay, connect to brain spots, to certain places in our in our subcortex and our emotional brain. And that connects to a feeling in our body. And when we connect the eye position with the emotional brain and the body symptom, then we start having a direct access to everything that is related to that issue we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So I want to deal with, I don't know, certain emotions that come up, anxiety, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, where do I feel that anxiety? I feel it in my chest. I have a little bit of a hard time breathing. It takes my eyes to the left here. And then when I continue looking in that direction, I start processing everything that is related to that anxiety in my life today. And it will often take us back to root core memories that are related to our early childhood. And it just happens organically. And the healing is instantaneously. It's like healing happens as we process. And it's very powerful. It's very deep. It's very not invasive, which is beautiful. And so it's every day another piece. It's not like, sometimes new clients come to me, and often a question when new clients come to me, they ask me, so how long is this going to take? And often my answer is that it depends how much they want to get out of their own healing. Mm-hmm. I can promise them that they will have progress within 3 months. Is it where they want to be in 3 months? Or maybe, they'll want to uncover more, or it depends on what you want from it. And healing is an ongoing process. Mm-hmm. And the same, the body release, every time you heal, something in your body gets released. Ask me, a time where I felt like a big change. I can say like certain memories sometimes when I have like deeply rooted memories that are very hard to deal with for me. I would have like a frozen shoulder. I had a shoulder for like weeks, and it doesn't matter. I went to acupuncture, to chiropractor, nothing helped. Only when the memory was released, that pain went away. It was like that. The moment the memory came up, the pain was gone. Actually, that's something I often have. When I have like a very sharp pain, once I unlock the memory, the trauma that is related to that pain, the pain goes away the same, like magic.
When you've had these memories surface, or like the frozen shoulder, has that been something really intentional as far as like sitting in it, feeling what's going on there, and then it comes to you? Or do you feel like it's more kind of, I don't know, like a less intentional process where it's come up?
I think once we create that awareness and we're on that healing journey, things simply evolve. And as we're always seeking to heal and deepen our healing, it's just a natural process. And yes, there has to be intention on wanting to resolve that. Absolutely. That intention, that focus, I find is very important. Yeah, I think it is important. And sometimes I can just go for a walk and I'll have like all sorts of pennies drop.
To my knowledge, I don't think I've ever had a repressed memory come up. And I'm assuming that it's different for everyone. But for you, what has that experience been like? Has it been like flashes that gradually happen over time? Does it hit you all at once? Is it a felt sense for you, or is it a visual element for you? How do you experience it?
All of it. Mm-hmm. It can be felt. It can be like a restlessness. It can be deep sadness. Mm-hmm. It can be a physical symptom like the frozen shoulder, where there was no particular emotion that I was very aware of. I just knew that something is sitting there mm-hmm. that I needed to resolve. Often it comes like in pictures, and then eventually like the whole story, whole memory will reveal itself. Mm-hmm. It depends.
And what about in working with clients, like if there's the true fear of going there, that they're not going to be able to cope?
It's a very, very natural fear. And we spoke about that in the beginning of our talk. Mm-hmm. We never access any information, any memory, any feeling.
Already.
We don't. Mm-hmm. I've been since 2002. Mm-hmm. Not once have I ever had a client sit in my practice where something came up that was too much. It might feel like a lot, and sometimes things are very difficult to deal with, but it wouldn't show up if we didn't have the capacity to cope with it. Mm-hmm. And I think what is more important even is to understand that the anxiety, depression, the stuckness that the person feels, we take that with us wherever we go, breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Like, we're afraid to deal with it and to cope with it. And people avoid going to therapy because they're afraid of looking at the problem. But basically, they carry the problem with them into their relationships, into work, into everything that they do, mm-hmm. which I think takes up a lot more space. Mm-hmm. When we actually deal with the problem, with the fear, with the whatever it is, with the stuckness in our lives, it's amazing to see how quickly things start to resolve. And something that seemed like a big, huge rock in front of someone, that rock begins to crumble very quickly and starts to dissolve and become something so different.
Mm-hmm. For somebody who feels extremely disconnected to their body, what is a very simple practice that someone could do on a daily basis just to start cultivating that relationship?
First thing that comes to mind is breath. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of breathing exercises. Even start with a 5-minute meditation. Mm-hmm. Where there's so many guided imitations that you can download these days, so many breathing techniques. Just start with breath, because breath focuses, when we focus on our breathing, we stop thinking. It means our awareness goes to our breath and focusing on where the breath is in our body and how the breath starts to expand. Just following that breath and being curious about the breath already creates a lot of awareness. And it really also brings stillness to the mind. Another thing that comes up for me is walk in nature. Mm. to walk, to really like focus on your senses, how you walk on the ground, how becoming aware of the breeze, the wind, like being just aware of all your senses as you walk. Instead of maybe just playing music and singing to the music, which is fun and great and brings a different kind of release. But if you walk and you're really present to your breath, to how you walk, how you feet, you know, your feet touching the ground as with each step, smell, you start to turn inwards.
I'm curious how your focus and your emphasis on the somatic piece of it has impacted your role as a mother. How has that impacted your parenting? And have you how have you tried to cultivate and nourish that mind body connection, like within your kids?
I learned that it's not about what you say so much. It's about the way you live your life. Yeah. The way, it's like, there's a saying with that. I forgot what it is right now, but you can't preach. Children don't like to be preached. Mm-hmm. I like it when you tell them do this and this and that, or pay attention to that, or it's about who you are as a person. And they learn through you, through your being. The same way you are affected by negative behavior, okay, and by parents screaming, drinking, whatever, okay? Same way our children are affected by the way we are and our overall being and how we live our life. And I can definitely see a reflection of that in my children. I remember once I was driving with my son. He was like 15. We were driving home from somewhere. I love having my kids in the car alone because it's perfect time to talk to them. And we were just talking and he said, "Mom," he was telling me about friends, and I don't exactly remember what the conversation was about. And he said, "Yeah, but you know, we are different." Mm. I said, "What do you mean by that?" And he said, "Mom, it's because you are different. You teach us how to listen."
It's the in 12-step recovery, they use the phrase attraction rather than promotion.
It's what you give is what you get. I understood when my oldest daughter, she's 28 now, and she was really little, like 2 years old. It hit me for the first time. I said, "Oh, wow, my kid is a reflection of who I am at each given moment in time. When I'm nice, she's nice. And when I'm not nice and I'm not patient, she's not nice." So her misbehaving is not really her misbehaving. Her misbehaving is an immediate reflection to how I am behaving. Mm-hmm. I say that. And I really got it in that moment. It's the world is a reflection of who we are at each given point in time. What you give is what you get.
They're lucky to call you mom. So what do you want to promote? What do you want to push? Where can people find you? What do you want to share?
I would love to share the understanding that doesn't matter what you went through in life, there's a way to heal and transform your life. Mm. And if there's a willingness, then it's beyond your imagination of where your life can go. So if you have a calling to change, transform your life, to heal, to let go of the pain of your past, to understand what's keeping you stuck in suffering, stuck in pain, reach out to me.
I'd like to circle back to what you said when you had that realization that you said, "I'm going to heal 100%. How do you feel about that statement today? Because I'll be honest, I'm kind of under the the belief that like there's always going to be some shit there.
You know what? There is. And I'm still healing today. And I'm still having things that I process through all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you ask me that, because actually over the past 2 weeks, I hadn't thought about that 100% in a long time. And over the past 2 weeks, that 100% has been coming back to me. For a while, I was like iffy about my 100%, to be quite frank. And then the last 2 weeks, it's been coming back to me. And I understand that for me, the 100% meant to open my heart and compassion to my family, my siblings, my parents, all of those people where I still might have resentment or anger or pain about everything that happened in my past. And even having compassion for all of these generations that came. And I think what I understood is that the 100% healing is not just about me. It's a collective consciousness towards myself and the world around me.
It's really beautiful. Yeah, it's so hard for me to, because I very much am, I don't know if like, maybe not forgiveness is the right word, but I do feel like holding on to, I do think that finding some sort of forgiveness is crucial. However, I also acknowledge that I have not endured what, like, a lot of the fucked up shit that a lot of people have. So who am I to say, who am I to judge in those respects, you know? So I don't know. It's just a really beautiful message, like, that you're conveying, considering, you know, what you have endured. So yeah, you are a real beacon of hope and love and compassion. And the world is so lucky that, you know, that you're out here sharing your story. And it's really, really inspirational.
Thank you, Andrea. And I think I'd like to add something to what you just said. People have a tendency to compare their life with others. And they say, oh, I haven't been through that much. Other people have gone through much worse things in life. I understood throughout the years that we all carry the same pain.
Yeah.
No matter.
There's no hierarchy.
There's no hierarchy of pain. You know, we don't. At the end of the day, we all carry the same burdens, the same pain.
Yeah, I am of that mindset too. I mean, so we also don't have, like, this is the one thing that I always like to point out. It's like, we don't have the perspective, like, as a kid to be like, well, at least I don't have it as bad as Johnny. You know what I mean? It's like, emotional neglect and sexual abuse can both result in the belief that, like, I am inherently flawed and unlovable. So I 100% agree. I just also try to be, you know, I also just want to be respectful for, you know, people that have endured some pretty gruesome stuff. So, well, this is awesome. I would love to have you back on. You're a wealth of knowledge and people are going to eat this up. So I'm so glad that, thank you, Barb, for connecting us. So, and I'll put your link to, are you accepting new clients?
I am.
And you work with people all over virtually?
I work both virtually and also in person. So I'm in Atlanta. I work in Roswell, which is just outside of Atlanta. And I work online as well.
Thank you so much. This is great. Let it all go. What's making you slow now? Just let it all go.